Yes.
So, are there any, like, does it matter how long it's been since surgery, or whether the wound, the surgical wound is something that has already healed previously, and then, several months down the road, reopen? I do get a lot of patients who are several months removed from their surgery, for example, and they no longer follow up with the surgeon for whatever reason. And sometimes it's the wound has reopened, and sometimes it just never healed.
I think regardless of time frame, it's always to your benefit to have them follow up with the surgeon. There always could be complications that may be associated with that primary operation. And I'll give you an example is that, I saw a lady with an abdominal wound. This had become, chronic. It had kind of been, she had kind of lost follow-up with the primary surgeon. It's a facility that we took over. I started rounding there and, she has this abdominal wound and, she has a very complex, history of abdominal surgeries. And certainly in my mind, one of the potential complications could be an enterocutaneous fistula. And this, something that could be a result of her primary surgery. And this is something that certainly we're not going to manage. I guess we could manage it, but this is something that, there needs to be the proper workup and those types of things. And I think it's, appropriate that she, have that surgical follow-up. So, some instances, even if they're chronic, I would send them back. You get a lot of these vascular paths that have amputations. One of the first signs that, their vascular disease may be progressing and they're having, ischemia now, wherever that, that incision is, that suture line may be breaking down again. So I think these are all signs that, their overall disease process may, not necessarily be, completely resolved. And, these are complications of, their original surgeries and things like that. So I would always be in favor of getting, the surgeon's input regardless of the age. I mean, they may say, there's nothing for me to do here and they sign off, but I think at least that way you cover your bases.
If you were to do something where you were to see the patient or the facility just to observe, like just to let them know if they need to be sent back urgently or something's wrong, that's something that you can still write a note on, or is that just kind of off the record?
No, I would always document your communication or your suggestions and things like that. I have certainly had patients where I have advised and advocated the facility that they needed to get somebody in ASAP, and for whatever reason they didn't. So the following week, when I asked them, what happened with so and so's, oh well, whatever the situation may have been, again, I just reiterate to them, this is something that needs urgent, evaluation. And, if it's not something that, can be done on an outpatient basis, then, you need to consider sending the patient to an emergency room. So I think you do need to, certainly have that communication with them, but again, you need to protect yourself, medical legally that you had this discussion with them, because if, if something happens and, that patient didn't get the appropriate evaluation, you were the last person to look at that, that issue. And, they may suggest, or they may say that, this was, a result of your suggestions or your care.
Okay, but you would do a visit and you would put in a note, but you wouldn't actually put in a treatment. You would just say like defer to the surgeon's treatment, but you would at least state like that the wound looks healthy or there's no reason for no emergency.
I mean, I guess, you can always, you can always just, cover a wound with some, keep it moist and keep it hydrated and use, a saline soaked gauze in there and say, cover the wound and, sent to the emergency room, immediately, or, you can always come up with
No,
some temporizing orders.
I think I'm being misunderstood here. What I mean is, you're saying that, that if we do check on a, if we do, on the favor to the facility, check on a wound, on a surgical wound, we shouldn't dictate the treatment, because if we dictate a new treatment, there could be some liability. So we should refer to the surgeon and not dictate a treatment.
Correct. In those cases, correct. And what I typically document is that, in my plan or in my treatment, I say, the per the surgeon's orders.
Can I just make a few observations?
Of course.
The one, as far as billing, and this is not the point of this discussion, but as far as billing, typically it's 90 days from date of surgery for billing for something related to that surgical operation. The problem is ERs, and this, I'm sure this is regional, but the problem that's become more of a problem is ERs will refuse, too often will refuse to see the patient or get the patient to the surgeon or a surgeon, and similar with the surgeon. We had a patient that had a surgical problem after surgery. We got them in the nurse practitioner, and the nurse practitioner refused to see the patient because the patient was basically wheelchair bound, wasn't in a stretcher, and couldn't be, moved from the chair to the bed. So they refused to see the patient. It is a very difficult time. So in the end, document what you observe and go for the correct, outcome treatment. And even calling the surgeon or the surgical team can be very difficult at times for them to actually call you back.
No, I agree with all of those things, Dr. Hendrickson. I have tried getting in touch with a lot of physicians, a lot of surgeons. Most of the time you go through these phone trees, and at the end of the day, you get nowhere, or you get to a voicemail. It has become more and more
Exactly.
difficult for physician-to-physician communication. If you send a patient to the emergency room, and that surgeon or that nurse practitioner, decides or elects not to evaluate that patient for whatever reason, I think, that's on them. I think we
Exactly.
that's the liability they chose to take and make. I have, I think it's important for all of us to, yes, take care of the patient, but at the same time, we also need to, make sure what we're doing is not compromising
Right.
our ability to practice and our ability to, take care of other patients. So,
And
I
getting to the voicemail or the surgeon's secretaries can take 10, 15, 20 minutes at times.
if not more, if it
If
was
not
10,
more,
15
yes,
minutes,
it's that.
sometimes I would take that in a heartbeat. I've waited half an hour sometimes, and
Right,
still have gotten
right.
nowhere. Good luck ever trying to talk to a radiologist these days. I'm sorry, I'm kind of throwing in a lot of my two cents in here tonight, but it's I think, it's important that we protect our liabilities here as well.
Can I run one of my patients by you?
On the positive note, just real quickly, we had a lady that had infected AV fistula, that if that infection, and it's a graft in there, not venous, but a non-autologous graft, that gets infected and blows out, that obviously becomes a big mess. We had communicated with the surgeon's office, his surgical team secretary, and was refused to be seen and taken up in the ER. But within 24 hours of that, the surgeon called back almost in hysterics, get the patient in record time and getting her to surgery. The good things do happen at times.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they are oftentimes stimulated by the fear of lawsuits, but I guess that's kind of the way things are sometimes. I'm sorry, somebody else also wanted to make a comment.
Yeah, Jim Flanagan, I have a patient right now. I agree with you, by the way. These are all problematic, and they always want us to see these people. I have someone who has a wound, I don't know, perhaps maybe a month old, and it's an open abdominal wound that was for, like, diverticular abscess, intentionally left open. But anyway, there's a clear, monofilament, probably some sort of, proline or something similar to that. It's sort of coiled in the wound, which makes me think that there's perhaps a fascial suture that's pulled out. But, I keep telling them to send them back to the surgeon to make sure that that's not a problem. But that doesn't seem to happen. What would you recommend I do in that situation?
Certainly. No, I agree with you. I mean, it certainly sounds like a fascial stitch, whether or not it's actually popped or whether it's intact. I'm not certain, but, something like that, I would definitely, ask the surgeon to reevaluate. I mean, the last thing you want to do is take out a suture that's actually intact, especially in that sort of a location. And then next thing you know, the patient coughs or sneezes or Valsalvas, and then now you've got an evisceration. That's not going to look, that won't look very good. So, those sort of things, I would certainly defer back to the primary surgeon.
Do you think I'm obligated to call them, or leaving just a pretty detailed note good enough?
I think that is something where, I guess, how much you depend or trust the facility to, transfer that message. That's another thing that can sometimes be concerning is things do get lost in translation. And when you play this game of telephone where you relay the message to the nurse, and then the nurse relays the message to, the other physician staff, and then that message gets relayed to the surgeon. Sometimes you wonder how much of that information really got passed accurately. So I guess, depending on the urgency and depending on how critical that conversation is from, peer to peer, I guess that's up to your discretion and judgment. Something like this, I think, would probably be fair to have, the facility take care of. But if certainly you had any concerns, then I think making that effort to try and call and say, I did try to call the surgeon primarily to discuss the situation. I think only helps your case.
And I think practically the easiest way to get through to the surgeon is at whatever hospital, and this is just too hard experience, at whatever hospital that was done at, call the operator, ask the operator to connect you to Dr. Joe Smith's secretary, and talk with that secretary directly. That seems to be the quickest way to get to someone that will actually talk with the surgeon. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a great idea. Thanks.
Dr. Adib, are you, you got your hand raised there. Did you have a question?
Yeah. I just remember you and I spoke about this a few months ago, and I just want to reiterate a couple of things. And I think maybe important to bring up again later, maybe another mixed table or something, because I think, I can think of 10 different other scenarios that have popped up since then that I wasn't really sure about, but, about this rule that we kind of made up. But in general, though, you said that they said that it was 90 days until we could bill for that. And now my understanding was that we were, because we are different specialties, that was what I think you had told me, that we're different specialties than the surgeons, then we could still bill within that 90-day period. Is that correct?
Well, let me clarify some things that may have been stated and maybe where the confusion is. So when a surgeon operates, that surgeon has a 90-day global period. So basically any aftercare that is required, that is, I guess, to be expected, that operating surgeon is not allowed to charge for 90 days. So if it's part of, you know, if you have whatever operation and you go back to see your surgeon, that post-operative visit is not something that that surgeon can bill for. That has nothing to do with us because we are not the primary surgeons. We were not operating, and there's no global period that's tagged to us. That's tagged to the surgeon that did the procedure. So, you know, your assessment of that patient is something that you can, you know, bill for, you can charge for that, you know, that goes without saying. It's referring to the surgeon's work and the aftercare that's associated with the surgeon. So essentially CMS has kind of bundled, when they pay the surgeon the fee for the procedure, in that is bundled what they estimate the aftercare should be, you know, and that's why it's a 90-day global period. So that's what was referred to.
And that's absolutely true. Just practically of note, the billing people will often be confused about this issue. And the reality just, it takes, unfortunately, it just takes more time to get them to understand and comply.
Were there any other questions or concerns or anything else that anybody would like to bring about this topic? We can certainly, you know, continue this conversation more offline if there are any specifics or anything that anybody would like to talk to. But I hope everybody's gotten kind of a general sense of what I would, you know, personally do in these situations, what I think would be, you know, safe for all of you. All right. The next thing that I wanted to speak about briefly is debridements. And this is something that has kind of come up from Tish on the billing side of things. And it's one of those things that, you know, I think will be handled more so on the billing side, but is something that, you know, I think needs to be discussed and explained. If you have wounds that not 100% is necrotic tissue, meaning you have, let's say, just hypothetically, you've got 20% granulation and you've got 80% slough. In your documentation, if you are documenting that only the slough is what was removed, then how that's going to be calculated is that you have whatever your measurements are for the wound, 80% of that is what's calculated as debridement, because you didn't document that you did anything to that 20% of granulation tissue. So if it is something that you are debriding that area, that needs to be documented, whether you're documenting you're removing biofilm or whether, you know, whatever you may be documenting, that is something that does need to be included in your documentation. So that's something that I wanted to make sure that I clarified and explained to everybody that, you know, if, and I understand that this may be a little bit of a moot point because of the way that the CPT codes are organized for debridements, and most of our debridements are not really going to change levels of codes, even if you do factor in that percentage of wound that you did debride or didn't debride. But that is something that should be included in your documentation if you are debriding the areas that have viable tissue in it. The other thing that I wanted to kind of stress, especially to some of our newer physicians, is that sometimes there is this confusion about depth of wound and depth of debridement. And, you know, when we're staging a wound and things like that, sometimes we use undetermined for the depth. However, for the procedures that you do, specifically debridements, you do need to document a depth, even though you may have some residual slough, or even if that residual slough is greater than 50%. And the reason for that, number one, is just as what I said, is that billing will need to calculate the volume of tissue that was removed in order to determine the appropriate CPT code. The other thing, though, is that if you are leaving a sizable amount of slough, sometimes the payers will not reimburse you for that debridement because they feel that that's an inadequate job. I understand that sometimes wounds may require serial debridements, you know, but if you're not taking out the vast majority of necrotic tissue, sometimes the payers will say, well, you know, your job was incomplete, so I'm not going to pay you every time you do an incomplete job. Once it's finally done, then you can get reimbursed. But that may mean that you've done 3 or 4 weeks of serial debridements, but you may only get reimbursed for one. So that's kind of what I wanted to make sure I mention about that. Melissa, I don't know if you have any additional comments or suggestions that you'd like to make on that topic.
No, I think you covered everything.
All right.
Oh, no, there is. Your post-debridement measurements should not be smaller. We are seeing that. I think billing is seeing post-debridement measurements smaller than your original measurements. So that doesn't really make sense to me. I mean, would it make sense to you, Dr. Karamati, seeing post-debridement measurements smaller?
No, I would say that if that's the case, wow, I think you're doing better than our treatments are doing.
Correct.
Yeah, I don't know how a wound could be smaller after debridement. Just a couple more things on my agenda here. What I wanted to remind everybody just real briefly is to, again, make sure that you are staying consistent with the facility's formularies. We have continued to see a lot of orders and things like that are coming through that we know are not consistent with facility formularies. And this is, again, something that I caution everybody to make sure that they are doing their best to stay consistent with that. You know, we've noticed on audit that there are perhaps sometimes some medications and things like that are being used quite routinely. And these are things that, you know, we're aware that the facility does not carry and use. And so to use these types of things as widespread as we've observed, you know, do that with some caution. You know, understand that we as a company, as a practice, are not scrutinizing as much as others also are. And a lot of these facilities will be tracking what you are doing, not only clinically, but also from a cost-effective standpoint. And if you are using treatments and making suggestions that are, number one, not necessarily standard of care, but you're applying them as they are standard of care, they will start to look at, you know, things like costs, you know, efficacy, all of those types of things. And if they see that things are kind of out of bounds, that's a really a good way to kind of get yourself kicked out of the facility, and, you know, a way to lose a facility. So, again, a word of caution to everybody to really do their best to stick with those formularies. Again, there's more than one way to skin a cat. I know we sometimes prefer to use some treatments and things like that, but there are always alternatives. And I certainly encourage everybody to, you know, look at those options when they're selecting their treatments. Any questions or comments about that?
Yeah, I do. I want to follow up on that. And that is, we've had some facilities indicate that they are mandating that we have to follow their formularies. And should we fail to do so, they will either ask for a replacement of the provider or of us. Because some of them, particularly MediHoney, has become a big issue. They do not get reimbursed for it. Some of them get cited for it, and the vast majority of our client facilities have said, no more, don't order it. So just please make sure that, you know, we pay attention to that.
Well, and specifically for MediHoney, you know, Melissa has sent out the correspondence that, you know, CMS is not going to be paying for MediHoney anymore. So I think you're going to see more and more facilities drop that if they haven't done so already. You know, so I think it's time to, you know, learn to make adjustments and perhaps not have MediHoney as prevalent in your orders, you know, going forward.
Maybe you should take it off of Prima.
You know, that's certainly what we, you know, as we kind of work on tweaking the wound assessment form that
I'm not going to take it off of Prima because we do actually have one operator that does have it on their formulary.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else just has to kind of fall in line and figure it out with what they have to work with. Chris Church has a very large operator in New York that uses MediHunt, and they choose to. They choose to pay for it. So we all have to just adapt and kind of roll with the times. You know, unfortunately, across the United States, it's widespread that every other operator has chosen to adopt not using MediHoney at this point because it's not reimbursed through Medicare and Medicaid.
Isn't that the only one, Melissa Elderwood?
Correct. Elderwood as a company has chosen to keep it on their formulary.
And this is, you know, certainly a concept that I kind of want to tie into something that I know some of our newer staff, you know, I've had this conversation with you. You know, this type of medicine is unique. And, you know, I always talk about the two relationships that, you know, are successful. Clinicians, you know, have to develop, you know, that relationship with the patient is obvious, but that relationship with the facility is, you know, equally important. And, you know, this ability to kind of work well with the facility is what leads to, you know, those of us that can have longevity in this area of medicine. I guess to kind of state it bluntly is that, you know, there has to be an element of customer service in what we do. You know, obviously providing, you know, excellent patient care is important, but having that working relationship with the facilities is just as important. I think this, again, this is all kind of reiteration and reinforcement of all of that, you know, that needs to happen. All right. And I know I've spoken a lot. The last thing that I do want to make sure that I bring to everybody's attention is, some of you, when you're ordering biologics, you may be ordering for multiple patients, and getting, you know, a package that has grafts for multiple patients. I was certainly not aware of this, and this came to my attention not too long ago, but, if you are getting, orders for multiple patients, oftentimes in that package, you will have an insert that states which graft is actually assigned to which patient. I bring this up because it is much more helpful to track, you know, for billing purposes, which graft is to go to who. So when you get that package, if you do want to, or if you can pay attention to that invoice, in that invoice, it'll typically have the patient's initials and which grafts have been delegated to go to which patient, because like I said, for billing purposes, that's helpful. But also, if it's a situation where you need to return an unused graft or whatever that may be, it's just much easier to track. So if everybody could be mindful of that information, if you are getting grafts for multiple patients from the same company. All right. Does anybody have any questions or comments about any of that? All right. Very good. Milt, I will turn the floor over to you.
First, I'd like to welcome any new providers. I see a few that are on this. I don't want to miss anyone, so I'll just say hello to everybody that's new. But anytime you need anything, feel free to reach out to me as well as to your regional manager, or Dr. Kiramati. A couple of quick things. So AmeriWound, likely in this next month, is going to be entering another state. That's going to be Florida. They're signing with an operator with 56 facilities that they'd like to give us all of them, but I'm going to bring up a couple of caveats on that. We've also hired the regional manager for that. Hopefully she'll be on call next month. Her name is Renee Prieto. She actually used to be a division director for a major competitor of ours, where she actually served as being in charge of 90 facilities that she had in Florida and in one of the Carolinas. So, you know, that's good. And then looks like another operator in another state, won't mention which state yet until we, you know, get some agreements going, but the operator with 60 facilities in that state, and there's another operator with 37 in that state. So two new states that seem to be heading towards coming forward. But, you know, that said, one of the things that these operators, as well as some others that we've been in discussions with, one of their first questions out of their mouths is, does your company utilize biologics? Because if not, we're not interested in working with you. And the one, for instance, in Florida said, you know, our current biologics vendor, excuse me, wound company vendor, orders at least 20% usage from their visits of biologics. And they asked me, what's our percentage? And I said, well, it's kind of like hovering around 1%. And they said, you better get that up because this relationship won't last if you don't. And to take it a step further now, surveyors are checking to see if biologics are being ordered. And they're citing facilities if it's never ordered or moderate, you know, not if they don't feel ordered enough. And surveyors determine whether a facility gets F tags, whether they get an increase ultimately in their reimbursement, whether they're going to be subject to fines or whatever, or even closure. So facilities are taking this very seriously, as are the operators. And I'm going to give you an example, and this goes back many years ago, but of how far surveyors can go. And you would think this is nutty, but just understand they're kind of like out to get the facilities. So the facilities are paranoid about complying and making sure that surveyors are happy. Years ago in California, at a facility, and this was in Northern California, a family had that had been taking care of a patient with a number of issues for years, just felt they couldn't anymore, had the patient admitted to the facility that was a client of ours. And then the family wanted to take the patient home for the Christmas, New Year's holiday period. And they took them home. And then while they were home, the patient contracted a pressure injury. When they came back, happened to be a surveyor was in the facility, and they came back and they looked at that particular patient's chart and they cited the facility. They gave them an F tag, actually a G tag at the time, but that got modified for failure, for the facility's failure to properly educate the family and how to prevent a pressure injury. That's how far it went. So, you know, they're out, you know, that's maybe how they get their jollies, or whether they're incentivized like police officers giving parking, you know, speeding tickets, who knows. But whatever it is, this has become an arena that there's a lot of focus now. It's considered a quality one, and it's considered essential from the operators and everyone else now. So we've got to join the times. Unfortunately, we have some providers that have yet to start, even some that do see as many as 100 patients in a week and have yet to order the first one. That's crazy. I mean, the percentages nationally are between 20 and 30% usage. And for us to be at 1% is, you know, unfathomable to me, at least. So not all of them are going to be approved. In fact, probably a high percentage are going to not be approved. That's okay. But submission, because that's not in our hands, that's up to Medicare or Medicaid in some states. But submission is in the provider's hands. It's no one else's. So, you know, please pay attention to that. Look to see where that's possible. We don't want to get terminated at facilities, or have the facilities claim get a new provider because this one's not. We want to avoid those kinds of things and sort of play well with our clients and you know, make sure that we're satisfying them in that way at least. So enough on that. One other area, though, that I do want to point out, that we also need to make sure that providers are following through on, are when the Wound Education Department sends out audits, they're not doing it for their health. They're doing it because there are issues there, and that they're the type of issues that can get a facility in trouble and get us in trouble, because, you know, ultimately many of these patients' families sue somebody, you know, for whatever it is. And anything like that, if they find something that's not in compliance with what they believe, you know, we could get tagged. You, the provider, could get tagged. And I will tell you that if Wound Education has pointed out to a provider to change something, they're not doing it for their health, they're doing it for these reasons, and if the provider fails to, and should it come to a suit later, we're going to let the other party know that we told the provider to and the provider refused, which will place the onus on the provider. You don't want to have to do that. But, you know, if you've got a question with that, you can discuss it with Wound Education, but they know their stuff. All of our wound educators are wound care certified. This is an arena they are expert in. And so please take their advice and guidance in this regard. It's for everyone's benefit, the patients, the facility, you, and us. So, you know, it's important that you, you know, work with us to help make this a positive situation all the way around. And for the most part, most of you do a wonderful job with that. There are always one or two situations that certain providers might get stubborn about. Don't. You know, talk to Wound Education. They'll talk you through it and explain it. You can talk to Dr. Karamati, same thing. But, you know, they're trying to help you. Anything you want to add to that, Melissa?
As long as you do your audits on time, you're not carrying forward your issues to the next week. When you wait and you carry forward things from week to week, your audits become larger and larger, and it's more frustrating for you and I, or for you and the team. If you need any help, we're always here to help you. Call myself, call any one of the other ladies on the team. We're always willing to, you know, do our best to help you. Even if you're on the West Coast, we make ourselves available. Just let us know what we can help you with as far as auditing.
Okay. Just one last thing going back. There are going to be opportunities to get some additional training if you need. You can reach out to an education for it, whether it's on any kind of issue. They're going to be happy to try to help you. They're going to get a little bit of a refresher or a little more education actually at the beginning of July on biologics, and we hope to have a greater push to make sure that we can educate better in that regard to help you and help us all achieve whatever. But not, it's not just on biologics. In general, Wound Education is there as a resource. And, you know, they're happy to, you know, if you have any questions, something you didn't understand or pick up at some point or a new issue, they're a department that's there to help you. And so don't hesitate, please. That's it for me.
Hey, I think it's my turn. Dr. Karamati already covered the formulary, so I don't have to rehash that with you guys. MIPS, continue to send in your MIPS information that we send you guys with your auditing. We are going to be working on submitting our first file submission to Reporting MD. Provider education, the yearly education, I have completed almost all of it. However, I did have to cancel some provider education I had scheduled last week due to being out for bereavement. So please bear with me while I get everything rescheduled. APRIMA wound form updates. Dina and I are currently working on testing another beta version. This will be version number 3. We are hoping that this will be the final version. Unfortunately, I've been able to break every version they've sent us this far. So if I don't break this version, we may be able to go live with this version and have Dr. Antello and Dr. Caramati test this version. They've been gracious enough to offer to test the version if I'm not able to break it. If they do well with the version, then we will extend it to everyone else. We don't want to make anything live with the providers before we can ensure that everything is going to go smoothly this time. So I'll keep you guys updated. That's pretty much all I have because Dr. Caramati, reviewed the formularies and CMS documentation guidelines. Like I said, please bear with me. If I missed anything from last week, just reach out, text me, call me again. I'm sorry if I did miss anything from you guys last week. Just shoot me a text or call me. Do you guys have any questions for me?
Thank you, Melissa.
Okay.
Anybody have any questions, anything else they'd like to bring up or discuss that was brought up tonight? All right, then. As always, we are here to help, to provide guidance, whatever we can do. Please do not hesitate to reach out to any of us for that. I apologize that tonight's meeting went a little over schedule, but some important things that needed to be discussed. And if anybody has any concerns or topics they would like for future meetings to be brought up, please feel free to reach out to myself or Melissa. I'd be more than happy to include those in the agenda. Thank you, everybody, and have a great evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.